Everybody, it is Wednesday again. It's time for another episode of Snipes and Stripes right here on NoFilter.net with my superhero partner, Tim Peel. And it never seems to, you just never seem to make me laugh every time I jump on with you, Peelzy. I don't know if it's what you're wearing or your facial expressions and a smile that you have, or it just looks like you're always ready to just go at a conversation. And it always makes me happy. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm awesome, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. NoFilter.net. Obviously, where the fans can join the show. Click on the knock button if you want to be part of the show. If we have the opportunity, we're going to bring you on to hear some of your opinions, disagreement, agreement, maybe your take on things. Sponsored by Whiskey in the Wild, the best chocolate and chocolate whiskey of all time. And of course, one of our favorites is Bet Online, one of the best places to make a lot of money and get your wagers in. Tim, tell us a little bit about Bet Online.
Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your NHL basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game betting live contests and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use your promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here, buddy.
Yeah, the game starts tonight with Toronto. In Arizona, we have a really cool kind of scenario being set up tonight, PLZ, and I'm going to get your take. Does Austin Matthews, who has 49 goals in 53 games, just think about that. Think about Austin Matthews and the run that he's been on this year. It's 49 goals. He is in his home state, his home city, where he grew up playing hockey in Arizona, in front of his family, in front of his friends. Does he get number 50 tonight? Keenan on the chat line says hat trick again tonight, which would not surprise me.
Keenan took the words out of my mouth. I got to see him Monday here in St. Louis. He hit the post once, scored his 49th goal. I'm with Keenan. I think he could get a hat trick again tonight. He's got 7 goals in his last 3 games. Would not surprise me at all, buddy, if he ripped it up tonight in that little mullet arena and put on a show for all his family and friends. And I think that'd be a great way, even if he just gets one and gets his 50th, I think that'd be awesome for him to get his 50th in Arizona in front of his family and friends.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. And this guy has just been an absolute machine. And for those of you who are listening on the podcast, we're actually just having a little montage of some of Austin Matthews' goals. And it is amazing to me watching all the different variations of his goals, whether it's Deeks, his wrist shot, his slap shot, his one-timers, that little drag-pull wrist shot that he has that I think only him and Bedard have really kind of mastered, maybe Connor McDavid also. But it's such a dynamic, lightning fast release that just, I mean, the goaltenders just sit there and say, what just happened?
JR, I have a question for you. Because my son takes skills lessons and so on, and I see them shooting that or teaching that way to shoot now. Are they able to shoot like that now because of the flex and the sticks where you weren't able to back in the day? Like, is that why, like, how has it changed from, you know, shooting it out away from your feet to bringing it in tight and shooting it?
No, I don't think so. Because if you remember the Easton stick that Brett Hull used was like a 65 or 75 flex. I mean, that thing was like shooting with a toothpick, and it was small. It was short. And when he hit that puck, it literally looked like the stick was going to bend in half, and he just had the proper touch. And obviously you have to have the proper touch. You can't put all your force into it. It's having that perfect look at that. And here's Alex Ovechkin. For those who aren't watching here or just listening, Alex Ovechkin is on screen with a stick that's literally bending like a bow and arrow, and which creates so much torque and so much velocity on that puck. Timmy, looking at this picture, there's no surprise why Alex Ovechkin has so many goals with the puck flying off that stick at that kind of whipping velocity.
Remember when you switched? Do you remember what year it was that you switched from wooden sticks to those Eastons?
Yeah. So when I first got up to Chicago, I made the team. Okay, I played four games when I was 18. I didn't score in the first four games, and Keenan thought it would be a good idea to send me to juniors to get a little bit more prep against some higher echelon players, higher than I was at high school. But in junior, in the Quebec League that year, they had new rules. One of the rules were you had to wear a neck guard. Another rule is you had to wear a full face mask. So we had full shields. And the third rule was you weren't allowed to use aluminum sticks. So these guys, the Quebec League in Canada, they were progressive long before all these crazy liberal progressives went cuckoo, you know, and was scared to death about everything and you know, safety and, you know, God forbid if anybody gets hurt, you know, so.
That's unbelievable that they mandated neck guards back then.
Neck guards, face masks, and no aluminum sticks. So everybody was using wood stick. The stick that's on the screen right now is my old blue Easton. This one I used in, I think it was 1992, 93, when I went to the finals, 94. I used a wood stick when I was in junior. Obviously, I had to. So when I got brought up to the Chicago in February, at an emergency recall, when I scored my first goal that first year, I only played 26 games in junior. I played the rest of the season with the Hawks. I had a Victoriaville, wooden Victoriaville stick, and I used that the rest of that season in pro. But my first full season, which was my rookie season, because I only played 24 games with the Hawks in 1988-89. So I played 26 with Hall, 24 with the Hawks, and I was injured half the season. But that next year, I used a gold Easton stick. I was one of the first players to use the Easton aluminums in the National Hockey League, and I never went back.
Did you notice a difference in shooting?
Oh, it was a huge difference. It was obviously more durable. You felt a lot more feel in the aluminum sticks. The crazy thing was is they would come in two pieces, right? They would come with the actual shafts. And then you had the blades that came specialized to your curve. And sometimes you had to put the blowtorch on them to curve them the way that you wanted to exactly. But then you had to put some tape on the end. You had to put some more glue and then glue it into the shaft. And, you know, the harder you glued it in, the better it felt and the more secure it was. But from where sticks have come from the mid-80s to now, I mean, literally they're like, I said using a toothpick. They're as light as toothpicks right now, and they're so durable that they're made so much better. The only time you really see people breaking them is when they slash it over the boards or on the glass or on the posts or on the crossbars in frustration. And it's no wonder why these guys shoot the puck 110 miles an hour and shoot it where you can't even see the puck, and it's harder on the goaltenders. But then again, the goaltenders are better too.
Well, you would have done the same thing. I'm a couple of years older than you, but you would have done the same thing as you were when you were a kid. You would have taken that stick, put it over the stove in your kitchen, heat it up, and then put it underneath the door jamb and try to get more curve out of it. That's what we did back then.
So I got to tell you the story. 1991 Canada Cup, we're getting ready for the finals against the Canadians, and I'm 21 years old, and just think of me, 21 years old in the Canada Cup. This is 4 years after Mario and Gretz did that unbelievable that Canada Cup
in Hamilton,
in Quebec City, and Hamilton and Montreal, right? When they were just unbelievable. So Canada Cup was like huge back in the early 90s, late 80s. So I'm playing in the Canada Cup. We're getting ready to play the Canadians in the finals. And Brett Hall, after practice in Hamilton, is taking one-timers. And I think it was Joel Otto is just throwing one-time passes from face-off dot to face-off dot. And Hulley is just banging him over Pat Jablonski's shoulders. Pat Jablonski was in net. And just bang over the shoulder, bang over the shoulder, bang over the shoulder, right? And Chelly's on the far blue line, on the far side of the blue line. Okay, and he has a puck, And Chelly goes, "Hey, Holly, one time this." And Chelly takes a full slap shot, and the puck stays right on the ice. And Holly went, whoosh, whap.
And one-timed it.
One-timed it. And Jablonski didn't even move, and it was already in the back of the net. And he looked behind him, and he looked at Holly, and all of us looked at Holly like, what the hell just happened? It was off Chelly's stick and in the back of the net in less than a second.
Unbelievable.
It was the most unbelievable shot I've ever seen with a 65 flex. That's how talented Brett Hull was shooting the puck and his timing and his touch. And he put his hands on his hips and he just looked at everybody like, yeah. Who's next? And he skated right off the ice. And it was the funniest thing ever. That guy, and I still say him, Alex Ovechkin, two of the best shots I've ever seen in the National Hockey League shooters.
When we posted a video last week of you saying that Auston Matthews is going to go down as the best pure American goals scorer in the history of the National Hockey League. And there were a few comments, and one of them I had to laugh. One of them goes, no, Mike Bossy isn't. And I quickly text back message back on Twitter. I go, Mike Bossy was born in Montreal, Canada.
Hello.
But a lot of people ask me, they go, does JR really think that Auston Matthews is going to go down as a pure goal scorer than Brett Hull?
He definitely has a chance. But also, now you're talking about whether Brett Hull is American or Canadian. He was born, he was born in Canada,
correct,
but his mom is American, so he has dual citizenship. So,
yeah, I get your point, because I was going to ask you about that and to see if you know anything, have any insight on that, because I've never really heard.
Well, Brett always played for US because the Canadian team,
right?
And I believe it was for that 88 team that we were that 88 World Cup or 87 World Cup or the Canada Cup that we're talking about. Brett Hull was snubbed from the Canadian team. And he was so pissed off. He says, I won't play for you guys. I'm going to go do my thing and I'm going to play for US because US wants me. So he always played for US and thank goodness for us because, I mean, he was a huge part of our team, but it was pretty cool. Let's bring on Anthony on and see what he thinks of maybe Auston Matthews being I think he's going to be the best goal scorer of all time. If you think, you look at his stats, right? He's 27 years old. What's up, Anthony? How we doing, pal?
All right, how's it going, JR?
Good. You know, we always love when our fans can jump on and our people that are loyal to the podcast can jump on and give their opinion. We're talking about Auston Matthews, and I'm just looking at his stats right now. And you look down the line, and he scores 40 in his first year at the Maple Leafs, 34, 37, 47, 41, 60, 40. Now,
jeez.
I mean, he's got... And now he's about ready to get 50 this season. So he's got 348 goals. 348 goals in just over 530 games.
Incredible.
530 games, he has 348 goals. Just think of that as a goal scorer.
Just the goal scorer he is. He just makes it look easy.
If you think about it, right? He's 20. How old is he right now? He is 26. Okay. He's 26. He doesn't turn 27 until September. Okay. So he's halfway to 700 right now.
Yeah.
And he's not even 27 years old yet. He still has his prime ages of 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. He's got 5 years of prime scoring potential, maybe even six.
Yeah.
He's gonna be a 700 goal scorer. I mean, that's sick.
Without a doubt.
Anthony, do you have a question for us?
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys about the Devils. I thought you guys were going to talk trades. Are they going to be looking for a goalie, you think? I'm a Ranger fan, but I figured I'd touch on the Devils a little bit.
Well, that was a tough loss last night to the Caps. What was it? 6-2, I think, was the final. That's a game that the Devils need to win. I heard today that they're trying to get Jacob Markstrom and that the trade fell through. If I'm Calgary and I'm Craig Conroy, I'm asking for a lot because he knows that you know, the New Jersey Devils are too good of a hockey club not to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They've been riddled with injuries this year. It's killed them. It's been terrible. They're getting subpar goaltending. I think Markstrom could come in and help solidify that. But there's going to be a price to pay, JR, for that.
Yeah, Anthony, do you think the trades that they had in the offseason, trading two of their high-end defensemen, really put a different look onto the Devils team?
With getting Toffoli, you're talking about?
No, they
Severinsen was one of them that they traded to Columbus, and I forget the other. Well, Graves is in Colorado, but
yeah, they gave up two solid defensemen that were very good quality guys, and I just thought that was the last thing that they needed to do in the offseason is to move defensemen. They have offense. They have offense. Let's keep their defensive core more stable and solid, because you see what's happening. Because now with injuries, New Jersey's given up a lot of goals. I mean, to give up 6 goals to the Washington Capitals, who were pretty anemic goal scoring wise this year, is pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, with Hughes coming back, and I think with Toffoli and Meyer starting to turn it on a little bit, maybe they'll make a good push for the playoffs. I'm thinking.
Well, I mean, they're.
I agree with you, JR. It's their defense right now that I think is letting them down, and they're getting average goaltending. So,
I mean, right now they're on the outs. They're at 60 points, and it looks like right now Tampa and Detroit have those wild card spots in the East. That kind of seem right. So they're 4 points back, but. If they keep this inconsistent play right now, the New Jersey Devils, and don't find a way to play better defense, they're going to find themselves too far back because they cannot afford to go on a losing streak right now with how many games they have left, with only 27 games left.
Yeah, you got some good teams in that division there. The Rangers are playing great. You know, the Panthers in that conference. The Lightning, Maple Leafs, I mean, and Philadelphia is not too bad. So,
Anthony, we appreciate you having come on.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you being on early, too. We know we came on a little early because I got to go to the Hawks game tonight. I'm going to go see Mr. Bedard for the first time in person. So I'm very excited about that. Anthony, thanks for joining us. You're the best, buddy. Always love to hear our East Coast hockey fans, whether it's Rangers, Islanders. Islanders came back and had a big one last night, overtime. That was big for them after losing to the Rangers in the outdoor game, and to come back and have another nail biter like they had last night.
They're giving a lot of goals though, JR. They're giving
lots of goals.
Like that, you know, they lost 5-4, or was it 6-5 that outdoor game? 5-4, I think. No, 6-5.
6-5. They lost 6-5. Then they
got 9 goals in their last 2 games. No, they've given up 10 goals in their last 2 games.
Yeah, and you know, I would think it would just be the opposite with Patrick Waugh at the helm, right? They would play better defensively, but they're scoring more goals, which was their problem. It never was their defensive play, but now it's almost like they're trying so hard to score goals that they're not getting back to play defense. And Sorokin, for some reason, is not saving a day for him like he has in the past.
No, he's not. And it'll be really... You know, it'll be really interesting to see what Lou does, because Lou is not one to stand pat. And you know, this team, I you know, like we talked about, Tampa's got 65, Detroit's got 64, Jersey and the Islanders are tied at 60, Washington's 58, Pitt's 56. Pitt and Washington are not making the playoffs, which comes to this point. What does Dubas do in Pittsburgh? Does he ease? You know, I read something today. Someone said, "Oh, they're going to re-sign Gensel and Stan Pat." And I'm like, "Well, if they do that, it's that definition of insanity."
Yeah, Keenan on the chat line says it takes time to warm up to a new coach. Well, they don't have time. They don't have time.
No, they don't.
They're in a situation now. If they sit there and win one, lose two, win one, lose two, they're gonna be out of the playoffs. They can't afford to get warm up to the coach. They got to do it right now.
And I disagree with that. You know, we look at LA. LA's won four in a row under Hiller. We see what St. Louis has won, 7 out of 10 or 11. You know, obviously we've seen what the changes around the league with other coaches. So, you know what, it's unfortunate that, and we've mentioned it before, but I just don't see Pittsburgh and Washington making it. I see a guy like Steve Yzerman, because I think Steve considers himself being ahead of the plan right now in Detroit. And I see Steve not making a blockbuster trade, but adding some key pieces to an already good lineup. They've got a good team. So it'll be interesting to see with Detroit, and I think Tampa will make it. And then I was reading today, you know, they're talking about Philadelphia. Will Philadelphia sell some pieces, because they're building for the long term here? And I think if there's a chance for them to make changes to make them better down the road, they're also willing to look at that. So it'll be interesting to see what Philly does. But I wanted to touch on a highlight reel goal last night, and that was Quentin Byfield in LA, JR.
Well, I had the pleasure of seeing Luke Robitaille and Rob Blake in LA a few weeks back. We were talking about the team, a lot of the dynamics about the team, and one of the players that both of them brought up that they were very, very happy about, and we were talking actually trade stuff, and both of these guys both said Quentin Byfield is not on the trade option for us. He has shown so much promise, so much talent. His work ethic has been off the charts. His consistency has been excellent, and they see him growing into the player that they thought that they drafted 3 years ago. And, you know, culminating in this goal that he scored last night, which, you know, when you score goals like this, what it does for your confidence, right? Yeah. I mean, your confidence, just you feel like you can score at any time in any situation. So good on Byfield. I mean, he's talking about scoring a big goal, and this line that he has with Kopitar and see, look at the speed this guy has. He's coming down. For those not here, we're watching Quentin Byfield get down the ice, splitting the defenseman one on two, taking it underneath the stick, backhand shelf goal. I mean, this is as highlight of a goal as you get. He shows speed. He shows tenacity. He shows his hand work, how crafty he is. He's a big guy too. I mean, this guy is a big guy that can hit. He's strong. Look at, and just, I mean, off his skate. I mean, that is one of the most, one of the prettiest goals, and you want to say athletic goals that you'll see all year, because he used every single option in his talent, from his hands to his skates to his mentality, his brains, and scored a huge important goal. Impressive.
You know what, LA, hopefully they're back to where they were, you know, before Todd got fired, because I think they're too good of a team, JR, not to make the playoffs. One thing before we move on.
Don't just quit on LA there. Here they are. They've just won four games in a row.
Yeah.
Okay. And at three out of these four games, they only let up one goal. So there's been some talk around that locker room, and whether it's with the players or with the coaches, to have a more solid of a team style defense. So whether the forwards are coming back to help their D, there's more of a 200-foot rule for this LA King team right now. Whether they're just getting great goaltending right now, but three out of the last four games is a one goal against. Now, that's hard to do. They had a squeaker last night, 5-4 against Pittsburgh, but you got to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's the type of hockey you need to win in the playoffs, right?
I didn't say 5-4. I mean 2-1. They split 2-1. It was 5-4 against Bruins that they squeaked out in overtime against the Bruins 5-4.
And that's a good Bruins team that they beat in Boston. So that's the type of hockey that team I think is built for the playoffs. They're big and strong. Pierre-Luc Dubois, who we have beat up a lot on this show, is playing a lot better. Were you surprised at all that the commissioner upheld the suspension with Morgan Riley?
No, it doesn't surprise me because the commissioner's not going to go against his people, not going to embarrass his people.
Exactly.
You know, they're not going to embarrass George Parros, not going to embarrass the referees. It was a cross check to the head. We saw it. It wasn't like he didn't mean to do it because he did. Precedents have been set with David Perron. Like I said, this is where I just wish again, Morgan Riley could have avoided any type of suspension by dropping his gloves, dropping his stick, and just doing it the old fashioned way with your fists.
Yeah.
This you know, BS cross checking the head, cross checking the shoulders, cross checking the mouth. It's rinky dink, man. It's childish. You know, there's no bravery in that.
Well, it seems that all the teams that Ottawa's playing lately, they all want to blow up Ridley Greig, because Cernak just blew him up last night. And it seems every time there's a chance for somebody to hit him, somebody's trying to take him out.
Well, sure. Because listen, all the players in the league, they're family. I mean, they see what happens. They know what they would feel like if Ridley Greig did that to them. And it's an image thing, right? Whether you do it in Ottawa, it leaves a black scar in Tampa. Yeah. People see this. It's like, is this what they do in hockey? They shove it up everybody's hoo-ha to make fun of everybody and to rub it in and stuff like that. Are they that classless? So yeah, then this is one of the things we talked about with Ridley. You know, he stepped into a hornet's nest. He's going to learn really quick as a young hockey player in the National Hockey League what to do and what not to do, because he's going to feel some pain for a little while because of that stupid move.
Yeah. Good for, you know what? I love it. I think it's great. Hey, listen, there's something that this is we're kind of talking about the playoffs and who's going to make it and who's not. But there was an interesting thing that I saw today when I was doing some research for the show. Jeff Skinner, who has played over 900 games in the NHL, has not played in a playoff game, JR. And before you, ever. So before you give your idea about or what your thoughts about it. So Jeff Skinner played in Carolina from 2010 to 2018. They missed the playoffs all those years. Then the next year he gets traded, they go to the conference finals. He goes to Buffalo, they haven't played in a playoff game yet. I can't stand Jeff Skinner. I think Jeff Skinner is part of the problem in Buffalo. Jeff Skinner has always been a me type of player. He's the type of player, he yells at the refs when things aren't going his way. He yells at his teammates when things aren't going his way. He wants to blame. I am not surprised when I saw that stat today, because I don't think Jeff Skinner is a good team guy. He's made a lot of money, and he has done F all in this league. He's done nothing in this league. He's never played a playoff game. There's not one other player in the league that's played over 900 games that hasn't played a playoff game.
That is an amazing stat. You've played over 900 games, and you have not played in the playoffs once. If that is not one of the most telling signs of individualism,
right?
Now, granted, you can't win with one person, but one person can really do a damage on a team.
Correct.
They can bring bad mojo. They can bring bad chemistry. They bring holes in systems. They bring bad attitudes. And I've heard this about Jeff Skinner. I've heard that he's a complainer. I heard that he was all about himself. I heard he was a me guy, which is kind of strange because he is on the smaller side. Maybe that's the small syndrome.
Small man syndrome, I don't know.
Yeah, the small man syndrome. The kid's got severe talent. The kid can play. He's one of the best skaters, one of the best edge work guys that there is. But you're right. This is a guy that goes up and he goes away. He comes to play, then he goes away. And it seems to be always on Jeff Skinner's time. Yeah. And, you know, I've had a problem with him since when he scored 32 goals and he signed a big contract. And then he literally scored 2 the next season.
Oh, yeah. Without looking it up, I guarantee he's the last year in Carolina's contract year. He probably lit it up. And that's why he got the big contract in Buffalo. But it was that was very telling to me, as you said. And I couldn't believe it when I saw it. But he was a guy, and not to harp on it, but he was a guy that when I saw him, I go, you're not a very good person. You're not a very good teammate, because I can see right through your bullshit.
Did you ever have any run-ins with him on the ice?
Oh yeah, all the time. He was an asshole. He just wasn't a good person. It was always about him, you know. And he's put up some good stats over the years, but it's all about Jeff Skinner. So anyway,
that's I'm looking at his stats, and his playoff stats have all lines through them. Got 932 regular season games, more now because he's played this year. So more like 970 games. He's approaching 1,000 games, and he's not going to make the playoffs again this year.
Right.
Could he be the first player ever to play 1,000 games and never play in the playoffs? I mean, that's unbelievable.
Embarrassing. That would be embarrassing. Hey, can you imagine?
Yeah, so this is the season I'm talking about. So Buffalo in 2018-2019, he scores 40 goals. I think he signed a contract after that season, came back the next year with 14 goals and 9 assists in 59 games. So granted, he was hurt, although he only played 59 games, but 14 goals is not acceptable in 59 games. 9 assists in 59 games is unacceptable. Then the next year, 53 games, he scores 7 goals and 7 assists for 14 points. I mean, that's 2 back-to-back years of just of brutality after you sign a big contract. Then he jumps up to 33 and then 35.
Yeah, he does it. He does it when he knows there's a payday, right? You know.
So, you know, does that bother you? Does that bother you? Does that bother you that you can do it all the time and you just don't?
It bothers me because, like I said, I just don't think he's a good teammate. I don't, you know, people don't play in this league for 900, 1,000 games and never play in one playoff game. I couldn't believe it when I.
Have you ever heard the expression, if you're sitting at a poker table and if you can't pick out the fish, and the fish is the guy that is that's the sucker on the table that everybody goes after, that's going to get sucked into losing every hand. If you can't spot the fish at the table, it's probably you. So I wonder if this is the same kind of situation with the Buffalo Sabres. Is it, we talk about the coach, we talk about the GM, we talk about their makeup, but if we see a guy with no playoffs in 970 games, hey, maybe it's you.
Maybe it's you, buddy.
Maybe it's you. That's a good point. That's pretty cool. That's funny.
Players at the trade deadline. Jacob Chychrun's name is being bantered.
Again.
To me, I would take him because he's only got 2 years left, I think at $4.6 million. Colton Parayko.
See, this is a guy I would love to talk about, Colton Parayko. Now,
$5 million, very reasonable.
Right? Very reasonable, extremely, extremely effective defenseman.
and signed till the 29-30 season. Okay.
So he's got some leverage in terms of his contract. Now, St. Louis is in a dogfight for the playoffs. They are right there. They are the second wild card right now. Nashville's tied with them. Minnesota's 2 points behind them. And Seattle's 3 points behind them. So do you risk giving up a guy in St. Louis like Parayko that you can get some good quality players back? Probably get a good, really good second line, maybe a first line player, a couple draft picks. But you're definitely going to get a high-end player for Parayko. Does St. Louis take that chance to dangle him out there to see what they can get? Because the Boston Bruins could use a Colton Parayko big time. The Toronto Maple Leafs could use one Colton Parayko big time.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, I've watched this guy play since he came in the league, you know, living here in St. Louis and refereeing him. He gets beat up a bit because he's so big. He doesn't check. He's not a guy to throw his body around. But when you have a guy that's 6'6", okay, and his stick is so long, he keeps everybody to the outside. Defensively, he's a beast.
In front of the net, he's a good clearer in front of the net. Right.
Clearer in front of the net. Tremendous team guy. People say he's too nice. You know, he's just that's his makeup. Like, it's tough to get a player like him in your franchise. Like, those are the type of players you want to get. But to your point, Doug Armstrong's got some leverage here because he's won a Stanley Cup, right? He's got the cup. He's already got the cup from 5 years ago. And they are on a rebuild. They're not the team that they were in 2019. They're very weak defensively. You know, their back end, besides Justin Falk, is really weak. Perunovic is out hurt again for the umpteenth time in his career. Then you got Torrey Krug, who's a shell of what he was.
Yeah, Torrey Krug gets beat out of every muscle off of every puck he ever goes against, every single one. And he's a great, great offensive defenseman, but he's too small to be in front of this net or playing a big, strong defensive role. But this is my question. St. Louis, yes, they did win a cup a couple years ago. Colton Parayko could be a very good commodity to help build that rebuild faster. Yeah. To get a real top end, one or two line, you know, top three, top six player, a couple good draft choices that could expedite a rebuild.
Right.
Would they be willing to do that though?
You tell the listeners your analogy that you said to me on the show before the show about Boston, for example, DeBrusque and Gresley.
Yeah, exactly. So here you got in Boston, you got a couple people that you can dangle in Boston. You know, Jake DeBrusque is a power forward, you know, can play second line, third line, first line. He could score goals. He last year even asked for a trade from Boston and they didn't do it. This could be a guy that St. Louis could use big time, giving up a Grizzlick who could be teamed with Torrey Krug. You can have the midget line up there, the little people set out there, right? The little people duo with Krug and Grizzlick back there again, and then get some draft picks. You know, that wouldn't be a bad look if you're the Bruins, or maybe that is that enough for Colton Parayko?
I don't know. We'll see. Another guy that's on that team is Buchnevich, and he's played well for them, but this year he's been average. I think Doug Armstrong is going to be a seller at the trade deadline. He did it 4 or 5 years ago. They were 3 points out of the playoff race. They were right there, and he traded Paul Stastny to Winnipeg. And the players looked around the dressing room going, well, I guess we're not going for it now. So Doug's not afraid, even though they're in the eighth spot now. They were only 3 points out of the eighth spot a few years ago when he traded Paul to Winnipeg, and he was their first or second line center. So Army's a smart GM. It'll be interesting to see. A guy by the name of Zachary Bolduc is playing his first game in the NHL for them tomorrow. He was a first-round draft pick. Falk's been put on the LTIR. So when they go on the LTIR, that frees up their cap space, right?
Yes.
So maybe Armstrong, maybe he's got wiggle room to bring it to be a buyer. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. One guy that I think will be on the move, because if I was a GM, I would want him 10 days every day, is Chris Tanev. Chris Tanev, he's a UFA at the end of this contract. They're saying you only have to get a second round pick for him. They're saying if you gave up a first round pick, you could get him tomorrow. Chris Tanev blocks shots with his face. Chris Tanev, to me, is a warrior. He is the type of defenseman that a Toronto needs. Well, every team could use a Chris Tanev.
Well, he's the multi-talented positional player. Here's a guy that can play offensive. Here's a guy that plays defensive. His energy, the way he plays the game, is the same every single time. Every single game, his consistency is one of the best in the league. You can see the effort that he puts on the ice. He comes off bruised and damaged every game because he finishes check. You're right. He steps in front of pucks. He sacrifices his body. This guy does not get enough credit for how good of a hockey player he is. I totally agree with you. If anybody can pick up a Chris Tanev at the trade deadline, it's struck gold. There's no question about it. Noah Hanifin, I hear, could be looking to get beyond on the run from Calgary. Is that a good Toronto pickup, or do they have enough offensive defensemen with Morgan Riley? Do they need somebody of Noah Hanifin's stature, or do they need more stay at home, solid puck moving defensemen in Toronto? Because Toronto's starting to make a move and make a push. They're playing better, but they're not built for the playoffs. They give up too many goals.
Yeah, their defense, like I've seen them play a lot lately, and I saw them live on Monday, and I noticed that I was trying to compare them to other teams in the league. Tampa's defense, Vegas's defense, not Vancouver, Colorado's defense. Toronto's got a lot of smaller defensemen. And when I say smaller, they're not, 5'10", but they're 6 foot, 6'1". But you look at Vegas's defense, their smallest defenseman last year when they won the cup was Alec Martinez at 6'2". He was their smallest D.
Yep.
Big E with long sticks win.
That can skate.
And that can skate. So I don't think Toronto's built for the playoffs either. I was very impressed. They've gone 4-0 without Morgan Riley on the back end, which is pretty impressive. They're playing.
Yeah, because they're riding Austin Matthews' coattails right now.
Riding them.
Right. They're playing some good hockey. Who, if I ask you this question, who is the most under-talked about, quietest playoff team right now, and do they need to make a trade to strengthen their playoff, their cup chances? Because this is a team, in my opinion, I have this team in my mind, that people thought would have made the Stanley Cup Finals already, but hasn't. So what team am I talking about?
Dallas.
No.
Really?
No.
Because Dallas is a team.
Even quieter than Dallas. I don't really think Dallas needs to make any moves. I think their team is as solid as you get. Four lines, great defense, great goaltending. I think they stay pat. They don't need to make any moves. For them, it's just their consistency. There's one team that has gone... I don't think anybody's talked about them since they were in their losing streak back in the beginning in November when the coach was having a conniption over his whole team. What team am I talking about? Anybody in the chat know who I'm referencing? It's an East Coast team, very good team, but nobody ever talks about them. And they could be very, very lethal with one good trade at the trade deadline to bolster their team. And that's exactly right. Keenan got the right on his pick. It's the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, I don't know, buddy. Like, I don't know what it is about that team. They were supposed to do something the last couple of years, and they have really underachieved. So you're saying one one piece is all of a sudden, you know, they haven't been able to get out of the first round the last couple of years.
No, but I mean, if you look at they're 71 points. They're second in the Metro. They're third in the East, or fourth in the East, right? So, I mean, they're up there. Their defense is good, is solid. Their forwards are solid, but they're just not. They're good, but there's nothing great about this team, and they need something great.
Their goaltending is not great with Ranta and however you pronounce the guy, the Russian guy. Their goaltending, you know, Freddie Anderson is always hurt.
He's had a rough go.
And I just don't think, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I just don't think they're built to go very far. I love Sebastian Aho.
Aho? it's not Aho.
But is he going to?
It's not Aho. I'm sure he's a nice guy. He's not Aho. Yeah. It's Aho.
But is he going to carry your team, you know, through the trenches in the first round, the second round? I don't see it. I don't see that in him. I see that in the Matthew Tkachuk. I see that in a bunch of other guys. I don't see that in him. So I don't know. I don't know if they got enough fortitude or whatever to get where they need to get.
Well, I mean, they have some really good players. Obviously, you said Aho. Marty Natchez. Have you seen this kid play? Awesome hockey player. Awesome. I mean, this kid is an awesome hockey player. He's the real deal. Teravainen still plays the game the proper way. You know, ever since he left Chicago, he's just made himself a nice little career for himself. Sergachev just hasn't been the same player since he got hurt. He hasn't been in the lineup as much this year, but he's a dynamic player. You want to talk about a role player, a guy that I would love on my team? That's Seth Jarvis. Have you watched Seth Jarvis play at all?
He's a tremendous player.
Tremendous player. I mean, this kid plays every aspect of every zone properly, and he plays it with grit. He plays it with tenacity. You know, they got great defensemen. Obviously, Brent Burns can bring it. Jacob Slavin is like, this team is a solid team, but they just don't have the wow factor, right? There's no wow factor on this team.
Would Jake Guentzel help that team?
Absolutely. Jake Guentzel would definitely help that team. Jake Guentzel would help any team. Do the Pittsburgh Penguins give up on Guentzel?
Well, he's a UFA at the end of this year, and he's making $6 million. So they've got to make a decision on what to do with him. I don't know what Pittsburgh's going to do. You know, Anthony Duclair, he's only making $3 million in San Jose right now. Anthony Duclair can score goals. He can score goals in a short period of time for you.
He also can disappear on you and just go away and then be absolutely anticlimactic, you know?
So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. You know, Jake Allen is a goaltender out there with Montreal. They're running with three goalies right now. Primo, Montembeau, and Allen. He's only making 3.85 with 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah, Anthony says Markstrom too. Markstrom go to Carolina, you're going to have to give up Ranta or the other goaltender there.
But somehow you got to fit Markstrom in, because Markstrom's making $6 million for two more years. That's the big thing, is Markstrom's making $6 million for 2 years. So you've got to unload. You're not getting him for draft picks. You've got to unload some players that are currently in your lineup to free up that cap space.
Listen, this Carolina team has a lot to deal. They have a lot of quality players that they can put into a trade. I don't know how big their minor league cast is, or what their draft pick possibilities are. But there's a lot of players on this team that they can dangle in front of some teams, some real quality players. So yeah. I'd be very curious to see if Carolina does something at the end, because they are there and they've gotten there as quiet as any team in the National Hockey League, because back in November, it looked like the whole team was going to fall apart and then Brind'Amour was just losing his mind back in November, but they've turned this season around pretty good.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun run. We've got about 18 days until the trade deadline, and I always love the trade deadline. I love when they make trades, though, when they break it like a week before, and then you see all these procrastinators and all these guys on TSN and Sportsnet in Canada sitting there with their thumb up the butt because they've got nothing to talk about because they just can't wait to break the next new trade. So, you know what? There's a lot of GMs. Rutherford's being one. He just did it with Elias Lindholm, Armstrong, different guys. I think the best trades you make are the ones you make 2-3 weeks before the trade deadline. Then it gives that player a chance to adjust a little bit better, JR. You get traded at the trade deadline, March 8th, you've got 30 days until the playoffs start. And trading them a week or, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before the trade deadline gives that player time to adjust. So it'll be interesting to see, buddy.
Yeah, it will be. But listen, we got a lot of fun things coming up. This weekend is Chris Chelios's jersey retirement. I will be in Chicago on the ice with Chelly.
What are you doing for that? Because I saw a flyer and it had your name on it. Are you emceeing it? Or are you?
No. Chelly picked a handful of people to be on the ice with him that are going to be part of the videos, be part of the celebration. Awesome. And so I will be on the ice with Chelly while they raise his number to the rafters. And it's a pretty special honor, to tell you the truth.
How many numbers are raised in Chicago?
I think there's seven. I mean, obviously you got the Esposito, you got Makita, you have Hall, you have
Bean and
Hall. You have Glenn Hall is up there, Savvy's up there, Magnuson is up there. So I think that's probably be the all of them. So Chelly's gonna be joining that group.
Is that like a? I'm jealous because that's got to be a warm feeling when you walk into that building tonight and the fans see you because they love you there. It must be a great feeling for you.
You know, the fans in Chicago treat me really well. It is a great place for me to be. They don't forget how I played here at Chicago Stadium and in the United Center. You know, this franchise is what, 90 something years old, 80 something years old. You know, only three players in the history of this organization have scored 50 goals in a season. Only three, which is an amazing, and I am one of the three. Well, there you go. So nobody can get all three. Everybody usually gets two, but they don't get the third. So
Armour?
Nope. So I'm one. I scored 50 twice for the Hawks. Who else scored 50 for the Hawks?
Makita?
The obvious, no. Stan Makita never got there. You got Bobby Hall. Bobby Hall, myself. Those are 250 goals. And there's one other guy that scored 50 goals for the Hawks.
I won't guess it, buddy.
No, you won't. I don't think anybody will. He's a guy by oh. number. What?
No, not Rob Brown. No.
No, Rob Brown scored 50 in Pittsburgh that one year.
Yeah.
Al Secord, who was more of a tough guy fighter,
probably had penalty minutes on top of the 50.
Yeah, he did. He played with Savvy one year, and Savvy just hit him for 50 tucks. And so out of every player that's played for the Hawks for almost 90 years, only three players have ever scored 50
goals. That's unbelievable. So, that's unbelievable. That's something to be proud of, buddy. I know you don't come on the show to talk about your stats, but I like hearing the history of where you played and so on. And that's a phenomenal achievement. What years were they weren't back to back, right?
Yeah, they were back to back. They were back to back. It was 92, 93, 93, 94.
We were line mates.
Tony Amonte, and then we had a bunch of guys on the other side.
I think at one point.
My first 50 goal was Steve Larmer and Michel Goulet, and then Tony Amonte came in. And then we're sniping again. So Steve Larmer and Michel Goulet were my teammates that helped me get there. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool. It's going to be interesting. So look for me this weekend on with Chelly, They're playing Detroit. They're playing his other team. So it's going to be nice having Patrick Kane in the building, you know, seeing that, because Patrick Kane's number is going to be going in those rafters, you know, in 10 or 15 years also. So it's going to be a nice little day on Sunday. So I hope you have a great, great week. I want to thanks to Bet Online for the great sponsorship, Whiskey in the Wild. Go to whiskeyinthewild.com. Get the best chocolate whiskey of all time. Thanks to Bleav, who helps us tremendously. Go to Caffeine TV. Make sure you go to Caffeine TV. Download us on Caffeine TV or wherever you find your podcasts. It is nofilter.net. It is Snipes and Stripes with my good buddy Tim Peel. I am Jeremy Roenick. We will see you Monday for Snipes and Stripes Weekend Edition. Enjoy the talkie on the weekend, everybody. Have a great week. See you, Timmy.
See you, bud.